Welcome back to Friday Drive Time with old Labour economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. Fighting to save tens, even hundreds of thousands of jobs in the public sector, two trade unions are preparing to do battle with their respective managers to save as many jobs as they can. Regional Secretary of the Communication Workers, Kevin Beazer, is here. Hi, Kevin, and welcome to Drive Time.
Thank you.
Now, first of all, how many workers and in what sectors exactly do you represent?
Right, we represent postal workers, obviously employees in Royal Mail, Parcel Force and the Post Office Counters Limited, along with staff in the old TV licences, so everybody across the postal sector in the UK.
So you're a regional secretary. Roughly how many people come under your region?
In the South West region, it's approximately around 30,000 people.
And how the negotiations been going? You obviously, we heard the news recently that there's going to be another attempt to privatise Royal Mail. How's that been received at the Communication Workers Union?
Well, I can't say it's not a shock or a surprise, to be honest with you. I mean, shock and surprise of the coalition. The Lib Dems, you know, suddenly jumped into bed with the Tory party and obviously lead in the vanguard in regards to privatisation, which Vince Cable announced at the conference. And unfortunately, we've dusted off the campaign material, you know, which we did last year, and here we go again.
Now, I'm getting deja vu because, we've had this so many times. Is it over the last 10 years or so there's been threats to privatise Royal Mail?
Well, I've been in the post office 26 years. I mean, the vast majority of that as a union official. But ever since I joined the post office, you know, when we had the Tory government, Thatcher, then Major, and obviously then into the Labour government, and where we are now, there seems to be constant threats to privatise the post office. But this, I think, we're in real trouble with this particular one.
Okay, I'm also joined by John McAnally. Now, John, can you tell us a bit about your union, the PCS? Who do you represent?
The PCS represents civil servants and a whole variety of departments, providing welfare, passports, tax collection, driving standards agents, Coast Guard. So any of the basic public services that come centrally from the government, we actually represent the workers there. We also represent an increasing number of workers in the private sector who are working in contracts for the government.
Now, can you tell us a bit about your background? I mean, have you always been a trade union official? What brought you into the movement?
Well, I'm actually a lay official. I'm still actually a civil servant. I have to go through an election every year, quite rightly. I'm national vice president of the PCS. I became a union member on the first day. I joined the civil service in 1981. I became a rep a couple of months later. I've always been an active trade unionist.
Now, what would you say to those that say now that actually the age of the trade union is gone, that this is something which was discredited back in the 1970s, and that actually trade unions now are better move out of the way because the market forces are coming?
Well, I think you've put your finger on the question, the market forces are coming. Well, they've already arrived, and the reality is the scale of the cuts that we now face in this country are unprecedented. The comparison's been made with the cuts under Thatcher. That's a gross underestimation. The comparison should be with the 1920s. We're talking about, for starters, and there will be a comprehensive spending review on the 20th of October when the detail will become clear, but we're talking about 1.3 million jobs being lost, 600,000 in the public sector, and even more in the private sector, incidentally, which will not only destroy the services that our members and provide for the communities in which we live, it will knock the economy into a double-dip recession, which will mean misery for working people. Trade unions have never been more relevant. If we don't have an effective and strong trade union movement, we won't stop the Royal Mail privatisation, but we won't be able to fight the cuts. But united together, we can fight them, we can stop them, and we can. And this is the key point, there is an alternative to these cuts. They are neither necessary nor inevitable.
Yes, but should you actually be doing things like that? Because we've just had a general election, and the people who are making these cuts have been freely and fairly elected by the people of Britain.
Well, I'm sure your viewers or listeners rather, on the radio, and won't be surprised to know that politicians tell lies, or at least they don't always tell the truth. I certainly don't remember during the general election, the Liberals particularly, but even the Tories, setting out the sheer scale of the cuts. Let's think a moment for what we're talking about. We're talking about cuts of between 25 and 40% in the public services. What that will mean is the destruction of a civilised basis of life in this country. That is how important this is.
Now, that's surely shock tactics. What they're doing basically is just trimming back in order to get through this recession.
You may describe, well, I think you're right, actually. It's a process of shock and awe, and the media in this country is being complicit. I have to say, the BBC has been particularly complicit, and given that the view that these cuts are necessary, no, they're not, and that there's no alternative, yes, there is an alternative. Could you say, in terms of this deficit, isn't it? It's probably the greatest contract that I've witnessed in my life. Is it 2 years ago, the big debate in society was about the failure of the unregulated banking and finance industry and the inability of the free market, which had driven us into one of the worst recessions in years. David Cameron, and it has to be said, with the help of the then Prime Minister Gordon Brown, has turned that debate on its head into a so-called discussion about the unaffordability of public spending. So they're really blaming the victims for the crime, and the banks are now back earning profits. They're now back with the big bonuses. And what this cuts in privatisation programme is second helpings, actually. We collectively have just handed over to them £1.3 trillion. Now, I don't know what a trillion is, but I know it's a hell of a lot of money, and it's our money, and we've given it to them, and now they're coming back for second helpings, and the price of that will be the destruction of our communities, the destruction of the services that we need in order to have something resembling a decent life.
But don't you think, John, that there's actually some sort of financial logic inevitability to this, that really, if you're fighting these cuts, if you're fighting correcting this problem with the deficit, you're actually fighting against the stream, and eventually it's just simply going to have to happen anyway. There's a financial inevitability to it.
No, that's simply not true. I think it's... I realise you're not saying this. This is the common wisdom from the politicians and the media, that it's all inevitable. There's nothing you can do about it. I remember, incidentally, when I first came to this city 21 years ago, I remember people were being told, it's inevitable, you've got to pay your poll tax. We managed to see off both the poll tax and Thatcher. And the reason was because people had had enough. And I think on the 20th of October, when the Comprehensive Spending Review is announced, I think people are going to be genuinely shocked, because at the moment there's a phony consensus being built in the media and by politicians, because they haven't really gone into the detail. When people know the detail, everybody's going to be affected. It will mean that working people, and when I say working people, I don't just mean the traditional working class, I mean middle class people, will not be able to send their sons and daughters to university, because education is going to be slashed. It means that you won't get proper health care, because what they're trying to do is it's not just about cutting jobs, it's a whole programme of privatisation, in order that the same companies that opposed Obama in America setting up free healthcare will be coming here in order to take over healthcare in this country. It is barbarism, actually. So if the question is if there's no alternative, the alternative is either barbarism or a civilised existence. But can I just tell you something about the hypocrisy? There's 23 out of 29 millionaires in the cabinet. These people don't need to use public services. It's a broad mass of the population. But can I just give you one small example of the hypocrisy that's going on? Our members in the Inland Revenue and HMRC...
That's Revenue and Customs.
Revenue, I was just going to say, yeah, Revenue and Customs, who collect tax, have been cut. They've been closing offices. They want to cut another 25,000, and they want to close another 200 offices. They've just closed down a very small unit in HMRC which deals with collecting tax from millionaires. And they've taken those people, a very small group of people, they've taken them away to do processing, because the cuts have left the processing sections short. Now, what kind of logic is that? It means that millionaires will now be able to avoid and evade tax. There's a lot of propaganda in the press. Let me give you an example. George Osborne says that being on benefit is a lifestyle choice. And if you think about that for a moment, it's actually an insult, but it's completely illogical. The idea that any 16 or 17 year old sits down at home and thinks, what am I going to do with my life? Will I be a benefit scrounger or a multimillionaire? Hey, listen, I'm just going to be a benefit scrounger. But they're demonising certain sections of society. They're saying that benefit fraud, which runs at $1 billion a year, and you're hearing about that in the press almost on a daily basis, but what they don't tell you is $120 billion in taxes evaded or avoided by the rich and by the big companies. So even if you collected the tax that the rich don't pay, you could deal with the deficit. So from that point of view, we've got a focus on how we can get out of any economic difficulty, clearly, but we don't do that by handing more and more over to those who need it less, to those who are operating only on the basis of profit rather than the basis of need.
Now, Kevin Bees is here too from the Communication Workers Union. Kevin, don't you think also that the Royal Mail is in a pretty nasty financial position? Something really does have to be done in order to make sure that it can continue into the future. Isn't that simply why Vince Cable and the Nippon Alliance are talking about privatising it now?
Well, the interesting about this debate, it's bearing in mind what we've just discussed about what's happening in the public services, a public sector, or potentially, is you can look at the same analogy for Royal Mail. Royal Mail has been starved of cash and investment for years. It's been a cash cow for government through tax revenue for a long, long time, but starved of cash and investment, unlike other postal operators in Europe. Suddenly now, it's not running efficiently. It's not running in regards to the financial situation of the post office, so it needs to be privatised. And I just want a quick analogy in regards to my fear about what's going to happen in the public services. So not only will they run them down to the extent that there's hardly anybody working and the services decline, then people will then look around, or the government will look around and go, well, they're not operating properly, perhaps we'll start to privatise them. And I think that analogy is the same with Royal Mail, because, you know, for anybody that has used Royal Mail and been around a long, long time, how can you take the best postal operator in the world, the cheapest, one of the cheapest postal operators, one of the most efficient, and suddenly be in this situation? You know, I've been in the business for 26 years, and apart from new technology coming in, what's changed? Okay, some of the mail volumes, and I know we've had new technology, etc., but we've had deregulation at a pace in this country, so that's taken away a lot of work to private companies and then dump the mail back into the mail stream, which has obviously affected Royal Mail's profits, but also there's been no investment.
Now, I get quite a lot of my letters now. They don't actually have a stamp or the Queen or the Crown on it anymore. They have a kind of hexagram shape, and I think it's called, is it called UK Post or something? And there are various companies like TNT, etc., that are, we see those on our mail now, rather than the Queen's head and the Crown.
Well, what happened is the regulator appointed by the government was it was due to come in and effectively promote competition. And what it did is, all if you look at the mail streams as an example, it's always been the case where it's the banks or insurance, big bulk mail users, they then offset with, you know, the posts, the John O'Groats, Land's Ends, etc., birthday cards and that sort of mail. Now, unfortunately, the way the regulation was slanted is that the post office could had to deliver the final mile, but it wasn't necessarily allowed to compete on price. So those companies like TNT, UK Post, etc., they take those big bulk mails, where it's banks, insurance, the health service, unfortunately government departments as well have done that, and then they make the money out of it and dump it back into the mail systems, which, you know, as a universal service, we've got an obligation to actually post. So for anybody that really knows what's gone on in Royal Mail, you know, a proud company, it's almost been devised to be in the situation that we are at the moment. So when you get Vince Cable and others saying, I'll privatise it, people will look at what the press say and say, well, it's in a hell of a state. I think it's been constructed to be that way, so it's sold off. The key question in this debate is a universal service and price, because if anybody thinks that a private operator is going to come in and they're going to operate a universal service 6 days a week from Land's End to John O'Groats, they're much mistaken.
Well, you mentioned Vince Cable there, so let's have a listen to him speaking at the Lib Dem conference last week and announcing his plans for Royal Mail.
I'm looking further ahead, my colleague Ed Davey. is doing valuable work promoting mutual ownership, as in the Royal Mail, spreading worker ownership alongside private capital. And I want to announce today that employees in Royal Mail will benefit from the largest employee share scheme in any privatisation for the last 25 years. The Liberal Democrats were the only party, and the first and only party, to call for an employee stake, and we are now implementing that in government. But at the same time, make it clear, the post office is not for sale. There will be no programme of closures as there was under Labour.
Well, so Liberal Democrats are giving rapturous applause to Vince Cable there, announcing that he intends to privatise the Royal Mail. Kevin, from the Communication Workers Union, this idea of mutual ownership, I mean, he was being actually really applauded there at the Lib Dem conference, and the idea, it seems, is to allow the employees to part-own the service. Now, surely that's a good thing.
Well, it's interesting, his speech. He went from Marxist to neoconservative, I think, within about a paragraph, but the interesting thing when he says employee ownership, what they're talking about is a 10% sale of shares to, you know, postmen and women. Now, anybody that looks at what's happened in the past, you know, our members aren't on particularly great money, and unfortunately, I'm pretty sure that if they're given shares, within a very short space of time, that they will sell those shares.
Now, that's certainly often happened in the privatisations in the past, hasn't it? The people have got their shares, yeah, and then just cashed them in as quick as possible.
Yeah, and therefore the hawks, if you like, and those people, big businesses, will pick those shares up. And that's our fear. Also, you know, when we're talking about share options, we don't believe that needs to happen. At the end of the day, we've looked at models. We've had the Hooper report, this is Mark 2, about how the post office can actually carry on, possibly as a trust. The money that the post office makes, it gets put back into the business. You know, there's this obsession about privatisation, about profit, etc. Well, one thing needs to happen. You've got a universal service. Now, even if you were to privatise elements of the post office, where you've got logistics and you've got mail centres that process that mail, you're still left with what's called the final mile of a labour-intensive postmen and women walking up to your door to post the letters. Private carriers are not going to be interested in that. So does that mean the taxpayer will pick up that final mile, or does it mean that the universal service 6 days a week to all those addresses actually doesn't happen? Because as in some countries, you know, they may have delivers 3 days a week, and the general public need to understand that the universal service is under threat, but also price. Because if you look at the price in this country for actually posting, it's very, very low, and those prices will go through the roof. The universal service will be under threat, and there will be shareholders that will be making a lot of money. Also, that the interesting thing about the whole debate is, all through the debate of privatisation, they've kept saying it's not profitable, it's been run into the ground, it doesn't operate properly. So then you're going to put it on the stock market and not actually sell it, so nobody's interested? I mean, come on. I mean, if for past privatisations, you look, the companies aren't doing very well, it's been run down into the ground, and suddenly when it's privatised, everything will be wonderful, the share price will go up, and they'll make loads of money. And we need to have an honest debate. The Liberal Democrats, I won't take any advice from them in regards to being honest. So, you know, it's about putting pressure on the MPs and also getting the general public, because at the end of the day, all the information we've had back from the general public is nobody wants this. The general public doesn't want this. So for them to actually say, you know, we've got the concerns of the general public on this, it's not about that. It's about business, big business, coming in and actually slicing up Royal Mail.
Well, it does seem like this privatisation of Royal Mail could be sort of almost in the front line of the government's policy towards public services. So, I mean, what have the discussions been like in your union about, you know, first of all, I suppose, an ideological discussion about, do we think that this is acceptable? And then secondly, what are you going to do about it as a union?
Well, I mean, there are some politicians who say, oh, it's ideology, does it really matter who actually owns the post office? Well, actually, yes, it does. I mean, that, at the end of the day, the post office has been owned by the taxpayer, the general public, for 350 years, and it's a service, and we've always said it's a service and not a company that should just be hell-bent on profit. It's service, if you come in the southwest as an example, we're not the only region. The geography of the southwest, it's a lifeline to a lot of people that may be disabled or elderly people, etc. In regards to what we're doing, we're putting pressure, as much pressure on MPs as possible. We're running a public campaign to get people on board. The time constraints are difficult because the bill is likely, it was going to be the 20th of October, and now we're being told it's been pushed back to the last week of October. But it's very interesting why the government are going for this very quickly, because we believe that the reason they're doing that is they're doing it around when the spending review comes in. So very bad news in with everything else. So you bury that in regards to all the rest of the stuff that's going on in regards to public sector workers, and in the hope that perhaps, I don't know, people won't notice, or people will just probably think, oh well, it's just a sign of the times. But this trade union, along with other trade unions, are not going to sit back. And hopefully the general public, when they realise what's going on, they won't sit back either.
Aren't you a bit stuck, though, when it comes to industrial action and potential strikes? Because by striking, you're actually annoying a lot of the customers of Royal Mail, and you're not necessarily going to be winning them over to your cause.
Well, we've not discussed, although we have got policy in regards to conference policy about industrial action to maintain the post office in the public sector. We aren't necessarily looking at strike action. What we've been running at the moment is a political and a public campaign to get people on board. It has to be said that some of the Tory MPs that I've met so far, even when you've given them all the arguments and the documentation, are still hell-bent on privatisation. The Lib Dems say, well, we've had that in our manifesto, and it was interesting what Vince Cable said about sub-post offices or crown offices in the post office network, that they're not going to shut anymore. Well, the reason they're not going to shut anymore is actually they're going to privatise Royal Mail and use the profits from Royal Mail to prop up the post office network. So they're using, and the interesting thing about that is it's all a network. Royal Mail, the post office, etc. is a network. It feeds off of each other in regards to customer that comes into the post office, which is then collected. As soon as you start to break that up, the whole of the network system, and you start privatising it, then the costs will go up, you know, and I think they need to understand that. And I think the Lib Dems have just sat on a manifesto pledge, you know, in some of those areas in the, you know, in the, maybe the southwest, where you've got the geography and the rural areas, and that's up and down the country, we'll keep your post office open. And we're trying to get the message to people, well, that's fine, but other parts of the post office are going to pay for that through privatisation. And that doesn't mean you're only going to get a universal service in those areas, because there'll be private companies running them. And at the end of the day, all they've got to service is not the stakeholders, the general public, it's shareholders. And it'll be profit, until the service is run down, or you'll be paying a lot of money for it.
But what about this whole thing of industrial action? How do you take industrial action without annoying the general public who you want to support you?
Well, we haven't got to that stage, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, if you look at whether it's industrial action, you've got to look, unfortunately, in the rules and the legislation of taking industrial action. We've got a trade dispute. You know, we've had industrial action in 2007 and 2009. Or if you're saying, can we ballot just for the ownership of the post office, I think we'd find that very, very difficult. What you do ballot on is any change to circumstances, terms and conditions, pensions, etc., terms and conditions within the workforce that could come up, you know, come because of privatisation. So, I mean, that's not on the agenda at the moment in regards to strikes, because we're trying to win over those MPs that are wavering, and also the general public, to try and say it's your service, you've paid for it, it's a proud service. I mean, we had the best postal system in the entire world. Why is it in the situation it is in at the moment? People should ask that question. It's not suddenly that, you know, it's all falling to pieces and nobody knows how to run it properly, or the workers aren't doing what they should be doing. It's because of government policy to run it into the ground, or run it right into a corner, and then say, ah, privatisation. That is going to solve all the problems. And unfortunately, that's where we seem to be at the moment.
Now, for most members of the public, their thoughts are not, you know, I can help save the post office. So how can we, you know, all of us, you know, help to actually save the post office if we believe it should be there as a public service rather than run for private profit?
Well, all members of the general public over the age of 18 are voters. And you need to put pressure on your MPs. I mean, at the end of the day, we were successful last year with quite a sizeable Labour majority. Mr Mandelson wanted to privatise. Why didn't that happen? It's because we run a successful campaign with backbench MPs. You know, not just our members, but also postcards from the constituents in those areas. And we can do the same. At the end of the day, MPs aren't in a job for life. They're elected by the general public. And it's the general public in this country, on no matter what issue, whether it be Royal Mail, you know, or the public services, put pressure on their MP and said, if you're going to do this, I'm not going to vote for you, you're going to be out of a job. That type of pressure actually works.
But that's a bit pointless, isn't it? Surely at the moment, where we've got LibCon Coalition in charge, and they're hell-bent on this policy, aren't they?
Well, it's interesting, I think, that the Lib Dems are actually, or the Tories are using the Lib Dems as cover on this particular issue, because I think, you know, it's no surprise that they've let the Lib Dems and Vince Cable, okay, as the business secretary, run with this policy and make all the announcements. But at the end of the day, we have got to put pressure, and at the moment, the only pressure we can put on is political pressure and also the general public and a campaign. And I understand what you're saying, well, can you put a pressure on an MP that's not up for election until 5 years' time when the bill goes through, you know, on the 20th of October? Even if the bill goes through, the campaign doesn't stop then. It will carry on, because the bill's not done overnight. It could take right up till next May, June, before it goes through. So we're not going to stop. We're going to keep the pressure up. And also, the analogy is the coalition going to last? You know, we don't know that.
Well, John McInerney from the PCS is also here with me. John, why should you, as public servants, be protected from the effects from the recession when all people in the private sector, many of them are having to suffer pay freezes and all this kind of thing?
I'm glad you've asked me that question, because that is what we've been hit with almost on a daily basis from the press and the politicians. And you know what? It's a load of nonsense. Public sector workers are amongst the lowest paid in the country. They work very hard to provide valuable and vital public services into the communities in which they live and work. But let me just give you a few statistics. Over 50% of workers in the Department of Work and Pensions, delivering people's welfare, actually earn less than £20,000 a year. I'm happy to tell you, I've been in the civil service 30 years and I earn £23,000 a year, you know, so which is hardly a king's ransom. Of course, low pensions mean, low wages mean low pensions. We're told we've got gold-plated pensions, but the reality is, of course, that if you take away the tiny percentage of high earners, the average civil service pension after 40 years' service is actually £4,200 a year. Let me also make this point on pensions. John Hutton, who's an ex-Labour minister, is going to report imminently on the question of pensions, and there's going to be a savage attack on public sector pensions, worse than what's going on in France, incidentally. And the cost of providing public sector pensions runs in at £4.5 billion a year, which is, you know, accrued. It comes out of people's wages. And these are mainly, as I say, low-paid workers. What you don't read in the front pages of the Daily Mail, what you don't hear from the Tory politicians, at £10 billion, more than twice that amount is paid on a yearly basis to provide tax relief for the richest 1% in society. So public sector workers are not living in gold-plated conditions. The reality behind the cuts in privatisation an agenda is really quite frightening. It's about a race to the bottom. It is true that a lot of private sector workers have had severe attacks on their pensions, but surely the answer in society is not to bring everything down to the lowest common denominator, but in actual fact to raise people up to a reasonable standing, a standard of living. There's a lot of nonsense talked about public and private. There is not some kind of wall between them. They're actually interdependent. In actual fact, private sector wages are rising faster than public sector wages, and have done for some period of time.
Now, Vince Cable, business secretary, is we're going to hear from him again now. He's saying that actually it is going to be the private sector that rescues us from this recession. So this is why he's spending so much of his time and effort on trying to make sure that the private sector works and happens, because we rely on them to give us growth so that public sector workers and everybody else can succeed. So let's have a little listen back now to last week, and Vince Cable, business secretary from the Lib Dems, speaking at his party conference.
But the real debate is not cuts versus no cuts. That is an absurd parody of the policy choices. It's how we can balance cuts with economic recovery and job creation, because growth is essential. Recovery isn't possible without sorting out the public finances. But the public finances cannot be sorted out without the revenue from economic growth. And this growth, it has to be balanced and sustainable, and not just another bubble. And the economic recovery will not happen automatically, by magic. The government has a key role. It has to sustain demand. I mean, that's, you know, basic Keynes. But liberal economics also requires us to remove obstacles to growth led, as it will be and must be, by private enterprise.
That's Vince Cable there, the business secretary, speaking last week at the Lib Dem conference. Now, Martin Summers, Old Labour Oxford economist, is joining me now. Martin, he's making it pretty clear there that it's going to be the private sector that leads us out of this recession. So surely the thing to do is to sort of unshackle the private sector so that they can deliver the growth that we all need.
Well, I think this is the basic fallacy of his position. If you look back to the 1930s, once you had a collapse in the financial markets of the scale of which we've seen, there's absolutely no way that the private sector is going to spearhead the recovery. It just isn't going to happen, in my view.
But surely growth...
You mentioned Keynes there, but it was very, very... we all know we've got to keep up demand. He said we've got to keep up demand. That's basic Keynes. But at the same time, he's saying, no, we're going to cut demand. Now, this is just not feasible. There is only one way out of a recession. Massive government intervention, and that is what will eventually happen, in my view. Sadly, we are probably going to have to go through the fire first, and people are going to have to realise that this kind of policy being pursued by this government, as we've seen in Ireland over the last 2 years, they've been cutting like maniacs. It hasn't done them any good. It's not reduced their deficit. It's crushed the economy, and now they've got a whole new round of cuts. There is no way out down that road. Everything that's kept us afloat since Lehman Brothers collapsed in 2008 has been basically the Labour government finally doing the right things after years of not doing the right things, which is essentially intervening and propping things up. Now, at that point, there should have been a much more aggressive policy by the Labour government, but unfortunately there's been an intellectual paralysis for a generation about these issues. But I think we're going to relearn some old lessons as we go forward.
Now, John McAnally from the PCS Public Servants Union is with me here as well. John, what's the reaction been amongst your union members to these cuts? It sounds to me as if it must be rather like something horrible coming across the horizon, with, you know, tens of thousands of people potentially being sacked. What's your members' reaction been, and how do you think your union is going to be dealing with it?
Of course, our union, the civil service, has been under attack, even under the last government, one attack after the other. And so, in a sense, it's nothing new, but we have to say that the scale is far greater. But could I just make the point, just go back to the point that I entirely agree with the points that Martin was making here. Really, right at the core of this question, I will answer the question about our members' reaction, but public spending is an investment, not a debt. And what we heard from Cable there is this kind of voodoo economics, which has been so popular since the time of Thatcher and Reagan. And for example, 92% of the cost of creating a new public sector job is recouped by the state. 64 pence in the pound in terms of council spending is recouped in terms of the local economy, or is and from that point.
So how do you recoup that money? Does that work then?
I'm sure Mark could explain this far more cleverly than I can, but in a sense it's obvious. If you've got a big civil service building or a big post office or a big council building, people go out and buy their lunch, for example. They use transport, they use the local shops, and of course it's all related to the question of wages. And over the course of the past 30 years, what we've actually seen, particularly in America, but it's also true in Britain, is wage stagnation, where the value of wages has gone down, has gone from 65 to 55% since the 70s. Let me give you one statistic. In 2009, profits in this country went up by 24 billion, but wages only went up by 2 billion. So there's a disconnect there. So really, Martin is right. We have to grow our way out of this, and our union policy on this is quite clear. And so, let's, if we can, give a few examples how we can do that. We need 1 million climate jobs in order to deal with sustainable energy. We need to bring the big utilities back into public ownership. If we had the receipts from transport, water, electricity and gas over the past 20 years, you could pay for the public sector 100 times over. We need a programme of council building, not just to deal with the homelessness problem, but to get the building industry back. And on this question, slightly going off the question you did ask me, our members, our members, I guess like Kevin's members, just feel outraged. They work hard all their lives. They don't have high wages. They really believe in the work that they're doing. They're providing valuable services. Services, as I said earlier, make the basis of a civilised society. And then they're told that, no, we're going to cut, we're going to privatise, and the only reason we're going to do that is not because these people, the private sector, can do the job better than you, because all the reports, including government reports, show that public sector workers perform more efficiently and at less cost. We're doing it because of ideology.
But the problem is that they're simply running out of money to pay for these services, isn't that the case?
That's absolute nonsense. I'm not saying you're saying that, but of course that's the argument. It's absolute nonsense. We're living in the fourth, I think, or fifth richest country in the world. If you go to the banks, if you go to the major multinationals, are sitting on piles and piles of money. The fact of the matter is they won't invest, and the reason they won't invest is because they don't think at this stage they'll get back the kind of rate of profit that they need. That's the real reason. There's almost an investment strike. When we talk about strikes, let's talk about the investment strikes from the big multinationals. But I think on the question of Royal Mail privatisation and everything else it's going to hit us, I suspect Martin's right, we're going to have to go through a bit of pain, but people are going to be outraged. I think the general reaction in terms of members is, you know, they will take a lot, but there's a breaking point, and I think we are rapidly reaching a breaking point in this country. I think it was a recent, I don't know if it was an opinion poll or what have you, but the situation is now young people and teenagers who are grown up now are going to have a worse life, actually a harder life than people like myself and the older generation, simply because for the past 30, 40 years in this country, we have seen an ideology based on an absolute nonsense that the public sector is wasteful and inefficient, that only the private sector can deliver. That's a real poison in society.
Well, can you give me some examples of where industries have been privatised and actually have delivered a worse service then? Because whenever these industries are privatised, you know, we're told actually what you're getting is now a cheaper, leaner, more efficient service.
Sometimes the trade union movement, labour movement, you know, were too soft. There's never been a good privatisation. There never will be a good privatisation, and there can't be a good privatisation. A privatisation will mean cuts in jobs, it will mean cuts in wages and conditions, and it will mean a less service. And if you don't believe me, if you spent as much time in the trains as I do, you would know.
But privatisation also brings investment, doesn't it, into the industry?
Well, there's different ways of getting investment, but the fact of the matter is what privatisation is, it represents a massive transfer of wealth and power from the state and from working people to that tiny minority in society who care only about profits. Now, the reason we have the public services, the reason we have a nationalised rail is not because the big business people in the past handed it over and said, hey, listen, you know, you've been nice, you know, we're going to give this to you. It's because they couldn't do it. They couldn't run it. And even some of the more enlightened Tories, like Churchill, actually understood that. There are some things which can be run in terms of the private sector, and there's others which have to be run on the basis of a public ownership. What we've seen, going back to the 70s, is really, as I've said it before, Reaganomics, voodoo economics, that says you just let the market rip. Well, we've seen what happened when you let the market rip in Chile in the 70s. We've seen what happens when you let the market rip in Ireland just in the last year or two. So what we're really talking about is proper investment. The public sector's part of that. The idea that there's a public sector in one corner and a private in the other is a load of nonsense. They are interdependent. The reality is, of course, we're going to lose more private sector jobs in the short term than public sector jobs. So where this growth is going to come from, I don't know.
Yeah, I just want to add to the debate as well. There seems to be, you talk about privatisation, a misconception in regards to suddenly you privatise a company and it makes loads of money. BT, as an example, because we represent members in BT. Now, when BT was privatised in the early 80s, massive share option, people made a lot of money, a lot of jobs went out of the industry, we lost thousands and thousands of jobs. But people don't necessarily know that the pensions liability of British Telecom was taken on by the government under the Crown Guarantee. So although that company was privatised, when it was privatised on the stock market, and none of the pensions liability, actually the pension fund was in a good state then, was taken on. So all that liability has been held by the government. If BT went bust tomorrow, the taxpayer would be liable in regards to the pensions, which leads into Royal Mail as an example. We've got something like a deficit of £9 billion, around that figure, and that's because the post office Royal Mail went on a pensions holiday, the government didn't invest, and suddenly we had a pension scheme that had so much money in it, and suddenly now we're in some difficulty.
Well, hang on a minute, Kevin. How can the Royal Mail just have a pensions holiday? Because they're supposed to be contributing regularly to these pension funds at the same time as money's been taken out of employees' pay packets to go into those funds. It's a sort of parallel system, isn't it? The employers put some in, and the employees put some in.
That still takes place, but when the pension scheme actually reaches a stage where it's got, and our scheme did, which actually we said at the time, you should raise the amount of money in the pension scheme so people are better off with their pension, 14 years ago, Royal Mail decided to actually stop paying their amount. I mean, they were still paying a contribution because they had to, but effectively they weren't going to pay so much in. So with the regulation that came in the post office there, and the actual pension scheme is in deficit. However, the interesting fact is, and this comes back to the privatisation issue, Royal Mail pension scheme is worth £25-26 billion. And what we think the game is by the government is if you privatise it, and they say to private companies, we're going to take the pensions liability on, and actually you can sell the assets, they take the whole of the pension scheme on. So therefore, they take the liability, which actually we've got an agreement with the trustees to pay over the next 30 years, which the government have said no. The trustees, Royal Mail, have agreed it. The trustees regulator has had his collar felt and actually said, well, actually, we're going to have another look at it. And the game is, if we're being honest, is they're going to come back and say, well, actually, no, you can't do that. It's too long. And therefore, we're going to take the pensions liability on so you can be privatised and investment's going to come in. What they're after is the £25 billion, because they will use some of that to pay some of the deficit off out of our members' pension scheme. And then what happens is the liability of the pension becomes beholden to the taxpayer and every government thereafter. So if the Tories are out, you know, in 5 years' time, or hopefully less than that, every government will pick that liability of pension on the same as they did in BT. So when you see a company being privatised, you would assume that private companies will take all the liabilities. That's not the case, and people in government are not being honest with that. You know, so it's our members' hard-fought pensions that are going to end. Effectively, the government is going to end up having that and saying, "Thanks very much. Your pension's okay because of the liabilities of the government. The government's obviously not going to collapse in regards to the running the country, etc., and the tax liabilities and the pension liabilities. But what they're after is that £25 billion." And I think, you know, they need to be honest, and people need to at least know that fact.
Well, the trade unions started the Labour Party back in the beginning of the 1900s, and the Labour Party has just elected a new leader. So let's see what Ed Miliband had to say this week at the Labour Party conference about the cuts.
Above all, I lead a new generation not bound by fear or the ghosts of the past. As we emerge from the global economic crisis, we face a choice. We can return to business as usual, or we can challenge old thinking to build a new economy. Let me say to you very plainly, I believe strongly we need to reduce the deficit. There will be cuts, and there would have been if we had been in government. Some of them will be painful, and would have been if we had been in government. I won't oppose every cut the coalition proposes. There will be some things the coalition does that we won't like as a party, but we'll have to support. And come the next election, there will be some things they have done that I'll want to reverse, but won't be able to. I say this to you very honestly, because the fiscal credibility we earned before 1997 was hard won, and we must win it back by the time of the next general election.
Well, rapturous applause there for Ed Miliband, the new Labour leader. Maybe I think I'll ask you first, John McAnally from PCS. Do you think that Ed Miliband is going to be making a really putting your case in Parliament as an opposition, as a Labour Party?
Well, first of all, PCS is not affiliated to the Labour Party, and it never will be, not if the current leadership have got anything to do with it. But the fact of the matter is he putting our case in Parliament, that one of the problems in society at the present time is that there is no voice speaking against this nonsense. And there's a consensus amongst all the parties on the basis that there's no alternative to the market.
Well, Ed is actually saying there that he is going to take issue with some of these cuts and challenge the government on them, like you would like to do, I imagine.
Well, what he's actually saying is, well, our policy says there should be no cuts. Well, what he's actually saying is that there'll be some deserving and undeserving public services. That is a road to defeat and division. The fact of the matter is that we need the public services as they are. We actually need investment. We don't need them being cut. But of course, there's such a consensus amongst the political elite in this country that, which, you know, includes the Labour Party, there's no alternative to the market, and that has left working people confused in some respects. But it's also left people without a voice. And that is why there's a debate going on in my union at the present time, a consultation going on about whether or not, under certain limited circumstances, we should stand candidates in elections as part of our campaign work. Not to set up a political party, clearly, that's nonsense. We are a trade union. But in order
to... Well, the trade unions set up the Labour Party, didn't they, originally?
Many unions did, and that's absolutely right. And incidentally, some of the propaganda that's used against unions like PCS and the trade union movement was used against them at that time and as well. But the fact of the matter is, working people do get confused, because on TV, in the newspapers, and in terms of the political establishment, all they hear is there's no alternative to the market, there's got to be cuts. But there is another voice, and that is developing in the trade union movement, and that is basically saying, yes, there is an alternative. I've ran through some of those points. There should be investment. We should be making sure that people like you and I have to pay our tax, so the rich people should pay their tax as well. We should be valuing in the public service, and we should be stopped making nonsensical comments like Cable and the rest about this debt, this idea that somehow the debt is unmanageable. The fact of the matter is the deficit and the debt was far higher at the end of the Second World War, and we still managed to build a National Health Service.
But ultimately, the PCS and your union, do you think the Ed Miliband is going to be a good leader for the Labour Party from your union's point of view?
Well, look, he's better than his brother David. At least he wasn't involved in or complicit in torture. And so from that point of view, he's making some reasonably good noises. I don't want to, if you like, throw out the baby with the bathwater here. But, you know, it's going to have to be a fundamental change. I was at the TUC this year, and one of the things I was heartened by, the leadership of the TUC, you notice there's a shift in the debate. And what I mean by that is there's now a real question in the movement about whether or not cuts are necessary. If Ed Miliband on Tuesday had said, we don't need cuts, we're going to invest in the public sector, we're going to deal with the bankers and the greed in society, the commercialisation, the commodification and so on, he would have been attacked in the Sun, he'd have attacked in the Daily Mail, but the broad mass of the population would have been right behind them. We've got to start telling the truth. We either want a civilised society, or we want a big marketplace where it's dog eat dog. It's as simple as that.
Finally then, John, from your union's point of view, where do you see this all going, and do you think there's going to be actually strike action and some really serious fighting really going on between the management of the, well, I suppose between the government and your members?
Strike action is inevitable, and I'll tell you why. Working people only take strike action when it's a last resort, it's when there's nothing else they can do. We try to negotiate, we do our best to put forward reasonable alternatives to cuts and privatisation. But what's going to happen, and I believe we're facing the biggest battle working people in this country have faced since the 1920s, and there will be people who will say that cuts are okay, we can cut some and, you know, save others. The reality is people are going to be outraged, because it's going to be an effect within their communities. We're going to see whole communities devastated. 25 to 40% cuts actually means ripping up the infrastructure of this country, the social infrastructure of this, such a thing. It will devastate our communities. It will mean a generation of youth on the dole. It will mean women in particular will be burdened, because when the services are cut, who will step into the gap? It's mainly going to be women. That is why the Fawcett Society, hardly a revolutionary organisation, is taking the government to judicial review, because the calculation is that 72% of the burden of the cuts will fall on women. So that is why the unions have to work together. The public sector unions and the private sector, those involved in the private sector, should work together. If, for example, you attack our pensions, we should be uniting in political campaigning. Kevin's correct, political campaigning is very important, media campaigning is very important, but what we really need to do is take industrial action where it's necessary. But can I just make this last point? Only a month or two ago in Bristol, we formed the Bristol Industry Anti-Cuts Alliance. It was formed by PCS and the NUT. I think it's got to be union-led, actually. But it's drawn in community groups. We hope that all the other unions are going to be involved. And there's going to be a demonstration in Bristol on the 23rd of October. We'll have speakers of Kevin, I hope, and others from the CWU, certainly. We'll have speakers from the Fire Brigade Union. We'll have speakers from the community. But it's not just about speaking. What it's about is uniting people who believe in a civilised life against the barbarians that are trying to destroy everything we hold dear.
So can you just tell us again where and when that's taking place?
It'll be on the 23rd of October, 11 o'clock, assemble at Castle Green, going to College Green, and I hope as many people will attend, because I think we all need to unite in order to stop what is an unacceptable attack on our communities and on our workplaces.
John McInerney from PCS, thanks very much. And Kevin Beezer is still with me here. Kevin Beezer from the Communication Workers Union, represent Royal Mail and British Telecom and other similar workers. Kevin, where do you see this going in the next few months? You've got this bill looming on the horizon, and what are your members' feelings about how to deal with it, do you think?
Well, I think the interesting thing, and we have been fighting, you know, similar veins of privatisation, strands of privatisation for many, many years. The interesting thing now is the trade union movement as a whole. And I think you started off the interview by saying, what's the relevance of trade unions? And obviously we've heard what Ed Miliband said. The trade union movement and community groups and the general public are the people that make the difference. Because I think, as you've quite rightly pointed out, when it comes to politicians, they seem to have been taken over by the marketplace and trying to make sure that they please the bankers and obviously the big corporate companies. And at the end of the day, the only people that look out for the general public and ordinary working people are the trade union movement. I got involved, if you know, I'll politicise and become a trade union in the early 80s when Thatcher was in. And it was not particularly nice, as most of us around this table will know. I think this government is going to be far more right-wing than Margaret Thatcher ever was. And I think what you will have is, I think, which we've probably not seen for quite a long time now, is, I'm not saying that there isn't the youth that are politicised, but I think you are going to see a lot more people now waking up and saying, we're not having this, enough is enough. Because I think that, you know, what we're facing, it will make the 1980s look like a walk in the park, personally.
Well, ultimately, though, the government's in charge, they've got the money, and they're just going to simply do what they want to do, Kevin.
Well, if you look through history, if we'd have just, you know, stood back and let governments make decisions and do nothing, you know, we would have still had slavery. So, you know, there's a time to stand up, and people will stand up. And, you know, in this country, unfortunately, we're fed through the media. Obviously, this radio station is an exception, because we've got time to talk about the real issues. But I think there is so much at stake, and it's going to affect every community, every member of the general public, every workforce, if you actually look on the knock-on effects in the private sector. And the interesting thing, if you come back to the post office, when you look at the vanguard of capitalism, the United States of America, they've never had any intention whatsoever of privatising their post office. That, to me, just sums up where this country is going. That even the Americans won't go anywhere near the postal service. And just on the last point, is which Martin made in regards to private sector jobs. You know, at a time where we're being told mail growths are actually declining because of the state of the economy, that, you know, we're losing jobs. And this is at a time when they're saying, well, we're going to sell Royal Mail off. God knows where these private jobs are going to come from. I think it's an absolute fantasy land. And, you know, we're going to end up in a situation, unless we fight, where we're going to have millions of people unemployed, you know, people that are going to be affected in the services that they need. And it's time for people to wake up and say enough's enough. And I think the Labour Party needs to take that on board. You know, my trade union affiliates, unfortunately, I am a member of the Labour Party, but it doesn't necessarily, I mean, agree with everything that they do. And they've got to be careful, because if the Labour Party does not stand in Parliament and start fighting for working people, they will pay a heavy price.
So what's your sense with Ed Miliband then? Do you think he's the man for the job?
Well, I would hardly describe him as red-haired or even pink-haired, to be honest with you. I think there is a political elite, and I think it's too early to say. But if he's going to, you know, as he said in his speech, he's going to accept some cuts, and he's going to obviously pander to unfortunate elements in the press and the sort of right-wing media and also the business community and also the banks, then he's got to understand who built the party. You know, and everybody says about the trade union movement and, you know, he won. At the end of the day, ordinary, you know, members, I voted the same as most people did in the election. We're the vanguard of the Labour Party. We are the Labour Party. And if you keep ignoring that situation, then you better watch out, because people will only put up with so much.
Kevin Beater from the Communications Workers Union, that is actually South West Regional Secretary, thanks very much for joining us, as well as you also heard, John McAnally, who's Vice President of the PCS, Public Service, Public Servants Union. Now, that's all for this week. Next week we've got a special on homelessness, and that's coming up now is the Sky News at 7 o'clock. Do please join us at 5 on Friday Drive Time each week here on BCFM 93.2. If you have a story for us, questions about this evening's programme, or want to suggest a guest for a future show, go to www.thisweek.org.uk, or you can email me at tony@bcfm.org.uk. Thanks very much to our guests in the first hour, Labour Councillor for Hartcliffe, Mark Brain. Thanks also, as I just said, to John McAnally, Vice President of the Civil Servants Union, PCS, and Kevin Beezer, Regional Secretary of Communications Workers Union. And, of course, to our old Labour Oxford economist, Martin Summers, who was going to be talking about Columbia, but we ran out of time. We'll do that next week. Also next week, in the first hour, we have Labour MP for Bristol East, Kerry McCarthy, with us, helping us navigate our way through the week's news. And could the recession make you a squatter in your own home? If so, what are your rights? If you hit the bottom, is it possible to bounce back up again? Ben Ritchie from Bristol Squatters Group BAM and Paul Hazelden from the Wild Goose Free Cafe for Homeless People on City Road will be here. Do please join us at 5 o'clock next week, and don't let the banksters get you down.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol